Welcome to the Fireside Chat. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Paul Sporer and Nick Pollock.
What is happening? Welcome to the Fireside Chat. My name is Nick Pollock, and I'm joined by the wonderful, calm, and lovely, adorned in a fleece robe of orange and white, Paul Sporer. Hi, Paul.
I thought you were describing someone else initially. I started looking around to see if we had a third here. Thank you. Very, very kind intro. I do appreciate it. Being wrapped up in this this robe by the fire. You know, listen, it feels right. We're here to talk some baseball, and we got to keep it cozy. What's funny is I do still use my space heater in the morning. It's right, kind of cool.
My feet. I think Brandon Woodruff popularized Raynaud's syndrome.
Yeah,
I have that. My toes and my fingers, my phalanges, they are abnormally cold.
I suffer with the same.
It happens.
Part of it's being tall.
I stream constantly.
Yep. I got socks here. You can catch me on a pod or a stream.
Put them on.
Very often putting them on. But anyway, this is why we stay cozy by the fire.
How is your sock game? Looks good right now.
I feel like it's solid. I feel like it's a solid sock game. I got the spectrum of colors. I can run it every which way. I've got dress socks if needed.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I rock my Adidas joggers all the time in a bunch of different colors. I got colors. I got socks for all of them.
You heard it here first. Sporer has got colors. And speaking of socks game, the bad socks game is anything the White Sox are a part of.
Correct.
And our topic today is really, when we entered this season, we knew the White Sox weren't going to be good. But we didn't realize that they would be the Cry Sox that they are right now, a month in. And it's interesting because our discussions that we do for 6 months about all these pitchers is very much in this crafted way of the season ahead. We see the season data from before. We try to assess what the full season is ahead. What is our strategies? It's not a best ball league, I shout, but then what does that mean? How should we be doing all this? And then now we're a month in to the season, and how we analyze pitchers is different. It changes. I don't think we talk enough about how it changes. What are the things that we are doing a month in? And I really want to hear from you, Sporer. How are you shifting your rankings, your targets, how you're considering players differently based on their mold and how they pitch a month into the year?
Yeah, as we kind of flip the calendar over on the first month, we start to reach some stabilization points with particular stats, which is important to me. The biggest one, the easiest one to really start to see some differences, 60 plate appearances for the strikeout rate. Now, what that means is not that that is guaranteed who he is now. He is a fundamentally changed pitcher. But rather that you can take that 60 plus plate appearances worth of work or batters faced in the case of a pitcher. It's 70 for pitchers. I was looking at the hitters being 60, 70 batters faced. You can now put that into the mix with everything. You can give that sample some credence and start making a potential adjustment, whether up or down. So now I'm looking back at strikeout rates over the course of this month here that have significantly risen or significantly dropped. If they've got those 70 plate appearances, that's in the mix now. Again, we're making incremental changes.
Yes.
But it is now something that will be a part of my consideration with the team, or with the pitcher rather. Then when you're talking about the day-to-day, like with the daily SP chart, we're starting to see some bullpens stabilize as we chase the ever precious win. And listen, quality start folks, I'm not here to hate on you, but your leagues are not better. Quality starts are just as difficult to come by. I used to think it used to be the fix. This was back in, you know, 7, 8, 9 years ago now. I'm old. When we were kind of looking at wins askance a little bit, like, oh, you know, this guy gave up 5 earned and got a win. You know, we were only bringing up the dirty wins or whatever. Quality starts was a reasonable option because they were relatively close to maybe even more quality starts than wins. But now both of them are rare. So that's not the automatic fix. Anyway, bullpen support, lineup support. starting to get some stabilization as well as to what you can expect when you're chasing these wins with the streaming. You're reading Nick's Daily Roundup, looking at the streamers. He's got to take into consideration where he can get a win. He might go with a little lesser skilled guy to kind of get the win. They got a great bullpen support, great hitting support. We're starting to see more of that. So to kind of make a tortured analogy of like baking a pie and putting the ingredients in, we're starting to really mold these ingredients now. We're just kind of taking that first step of, you know, putting them in the bowl together. The strikeout rate starts to matter. The walk rate will still take a little bit longer, but I'm starting to look at that. It's 170 batters faced, so it's more than 2x, but you can at least start to see what sort of things are leading to the walk improvement or the walk fall off. And then, like I said, team support, because I am looking for these wins the best I can. We cannot plan for them. They are difficult, but you still want to put yourself in the best positions. Who are the best lineups? Who are the best bullpens? I'm actually weighing bullpen more than lineup right now in terms of like chasing that win, because you get 5 innings on a streamer. Mostly you're not a lot of 6-7 inning streamers out there. You need to be confident for 4 innings. So yeah, team context and early skills that start to stabilize are what I really start to focus on the month in here.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think about it with spring training. We get all this extra new data. Mm-hmm. We're trying to figure out who are the ones who are doing new things. And right now, at the end of April, we're seeing what was, you know, we have the first showcase of, okay, this is my new package. This is it. This is what I bring to the table. You know, sometimes it's guys making themselves worse. AJ Puck, DL Hall. Sometimes it's Tristan McKenzie saying, yes, I do have a torn ligament still in my elbow and I'm pitching through this. It's also guys like Mackenzie Gore that say, yes, my velocity is 97 now and that's going to hold. It's Jared Jones, instead of throwing 95, it's 99.
Saying, hey, look at me.
A rotation spot. Right. It's those are elements that it's difficult the first week. I always say the first week of the season is the hardest week of the season. I remember Tanner Houck was 7% rostered, believe it or not, before his first start. Yeah, two step against, I believe, the Angels and the Athletics. And it's something where, you know, I'm going to say this many, many a time, because I feel it's just one of the most important strategies that I go for is if you are, you know, when you're in that 12 teamer mix and it's all the guys that you have available from 50 on and there's too many to pick, always pick the ones that are going early, because I dropped AJ Puck for Tanner Houck in 2 leagues after that first start.
Decision, early decisions is what you preach, and I totally agree with it.
It's unbelievable. And it's that kind of stuff that Tanner Houck, I didn't think that he'd have a better splitter this year, but that's what he's doing right now, and that's good. Now he's attacking lefties in that way. But that first week, we don't really know a ton about what they're doing. It's pure chaos. Mm-hmm. But the skills themselves generally are the same unless it's velocity. Velocity can ramp up, and we do see that.
Certainly.
And we do see velocity in the first start look higher and then go down, especially if it's someone younger who's trying to showcase themselves, right?
Yep.
But here we are a month later, and yes, we do see some surprises still. Garrett Crochet just threw a changeup 18 times. Against the Twins, which is incredible. And I'm
trying to stay relevant.
He has 4 pitches now, Spore.
I know.
He was only supposed to have 2.
There's a reason that's been difficult, if you've been watching, if you're not just box score scouting on Crochet, to get away even during the struggles, because there's elements there that I'm still very intrigued by. Right. And, you know, you can kind of see how it hasn't been working either. Like the failures have made sense, and I think they're correctable is the point that I'm trying to make with Garrett Crochet, especially with a deeper bag. You know, a 4-pitch arsenal is huge for somebody with his talent. So,
right.
You know, you talk about what are you learning? We're learning things like that. And you got to make quick changes on that too, because then if one or two of those pitches falls off for 3-4 starts in a row, then we're saying back to Crochet being maybe a 2-pitch guy, right? Like those things are always changing. That's why it's tough to kind of stay on top of it. But I think you should do it in maybe 6 to 8 start chunks, as opposed to overreacting to every single start.
So this is the interesting thing is that is a, so there's certain things about the skills, right? About like, cool, this is, you have this 4-pitch mix or whatever it is. And oh, look, this is a thing that we're banking on and it's worse. Mm-hmm. And this is something that it's really hard to just change when you start. With Garrett Crochet, it's, well, hold on, we like the raw skills, and we see if there's some more that can come in time. And I didn't actually buy into the raw skills at first. I thought that the slider was, I mean, after the first start against Atlanta, you can read my roundup. I was like, I don't know if I really buy into this yet. And even watching, I was like, yeah, but the slider, like, it feels like he doesn't know where it's going and he doesn't have anything else. And it's an awesome surprise, like, to see the cutter show up first. And when the cutter showed up, that's when I was in. Of course, then he has three bad starts after.
Yeah.
There's a changeup, right? And it's an interesting thing a month in that, I mean, pretty much to your point before, these guys are often always developing. But on the other side of it, I mean, that's really like your back half off the cliff and like who you're going for, who you're not. And I really do want to harp on, hey, there's some guys like Brandon Fought to me has still not done anything different. Brady Singer was having a great line or so or two, but it was still really sinker sweeper. And maybe the four seamer once showed up and was maybe the nullifier for lefties. And now he throws it five times a game again.
Well, not only that,
that isn't different, right?
Exactly. And with Singer, you're totally right. It's looking more like 2022, where he showed what the best of his skills can net, which means the 3.23 ERA and the 1.14 WHIP are back on the table. Like, maybe he's having another great year, but I still don't think he's taken a jump. I think this is all just within his range of range of outcomes, which is okay. This isn't to say that I'm negative. I don't know where you stand on Singer, but like, I'm not negative on him. I'm just saying he hasn't turned a corner to where, holy smokes, here we go. It's more of like, what am I going to get? 2021, 2022, or 2023? Because he's still the same Singer. It's just the range of outcomes is relatively large for guys.
Right. So for me with Brady Singer, it's, I'm not interested, right? And there's certain guys that I've wish casted. I wish casted on the positive side, showed Imanaga, and that cool. And then we have a different reference point for that. He still has some things he needs to fix, but he is at least doing the high four seamer thing, and that's clearly working. Yusei Kikuchi moved from, had a change up his first game and then moved away from it. And then he's been much better since. Mm-hmm. And on their side, I wish casted that Luis Gil would have the strike rates that he saw in the spring. He really hasn't. Those last two starts have actually been a little bit better, but it's still not that.
It's been grinding.
Right. And it's still, there's still a possibility for that to get better.
Yeah.
I guess what the real focus of this topic for me is, which are I want to really go over a lot of these guys that are performing differently than we've expected, and how we have this analysis of, is this something that is long-term? And we think like, no, I need to get out early and adapt. Or is it something that we think, no, we are going to trust either A, they're going to figure this out, B, that it's just, you know, bad luck in their way, or C, that, this is just a weird sample size and who cares, right? So that is such an important thing for us to do. And really, a month in, it is totally a different perspective because we don't have any data a month earlier. And one I really wanted to talk about, which I imagine so many are just, what is going on? I know my take. I talked about it with Eric yesterday, but I really don't know what you think. What is it with Joe Musgrove?
Musgrove was somebody I had a lot of trepidation about coming in. This is so not analytical to say what the next thing I'm going to say, but it's just been bad vibes all around. Like, I just haven't had a good vibe on anything. And it dates back, obviously, to this last season ending early for Joe Musgrove due to injury, shoulder injury, and kind of permeating this year. Spring didn't look that great. First start didn't look that great. Okay, it's still Joe Musgrove trying to kind of ride through it. Shows an occasional glimpse with a couple of CGs, or not CGs, QSs here. We'd love to see a complete game, but no, you know, we see some quality starts there. But we know that if you watched him, he wasn't turning any corners there. He struck out three in both of them, walked four in one of them, just happened to only give up three runs. He is just not himself. And I think it's one of those situations with Joe Musgrove where he's able to pitch. So it's not like he has to go on the IL, and he may. I don't know. I'm fostering a guess here if they're letting him pitch, and hopefully he's keeping in tune with the training staff and everything if he is injured. But he's very clearly not 100%. And, you know, we make an offhanded comment sometimes, like 80% of this guy is better than 100% of this guy. And that's almost never true.
Yeah, that's not
almost never true. Maybe like 80% of Pete DeGrom is still like really good.
Verlander and Scherzer is the one that I would think of or something like that. But yeah.
Exactly. No. And that's exactly who they would get used with, guys like that, especially when they grind it out or whatever. What you're more meaning to say is like 95% of them, because 80%, I think it's more in the range of outcomes of what we're seeing here from Joe Musgrove. I just don't think he's right. And I know that's like a nebulous whatever, but what evidence do we have that he is? Comes in with a bum shoulder, has not looked like himself at any moment, starting from spring all the way to this point. What are we banking on here? Yeah. I'm starting to think off year. I wasn't super in coming in the year. I had little conviction on Joe Musgrove, and I'm shaken now, 35 innings where I'm not at all interested.
So he has a 6.94 ERA in 35 innings and a 1.66 whip with just a 17% strikeout rate, Joe Musgrove.
Yep.
The thing is, his swing strike rate, exactly the same at 12.5%. Yeah. His hit per nine has been 8 in previous years, pretty much like it was 7, 7.7, 8.3, like 7.5. Like these are always around 8. 11.6.
Crazy.
Right now.
350 BABIP.
His PLV, which is our pitch quantifier that says based on locations and movement of everything inside of an arsenal. 501 in 2021. 501 in 2022. 502 in 2023. This year, 504.
That's wild.
So what I'm seeing is home run rate at 2.31 homer per nine.
Yep.
2x the home run to fly ball. 9.92, 24% homer fly ball rate. But then it's also a ICR, ideal contact rate. What kind of contact is he allowing? 48% ICR as opposed to 33%, right?
So doesn't that one right there hint at him being a facsimile of himself, but just a bit off for Joe Musgrove?
So what, I mean, the PLV side and the swing strike rate side is pretty much saying to me, like, look, like he has the
ability.
He's
in there, but there's something missing.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Obviously something is wrong. And I don't like suggesting this because I think it's a cop-out analysis every time I say what I'm about to say. Because it's pretty much us shrugging.
Sure.
This is to me the most he's tipping I've seen. Right.
I don't think that's necessarily a cop out. How often do we hear that then? They fix up the mechanic, whatever that mechanical flaw is, because he's so close. When you bring up all those numbers, Musgrove is so close, but when he's missing, he is getting destroyed, which would lean back to what you're saying about tipping, because it's not all the time. He's throwing a lot of good pitches, but when they really get the read, it's like a 2-0 pitch with two on or something. You know, these multi-run homers and all that sort of destruction is coming on Musgrove right now when he's so good for so much of the start, but the misses are so bad.
I mean, I can't even like really lean into this because even like a lot of the swing metrics I'm seeing, the plate discipline stuff on our player pages, contact rate is the same. 78%. I can't even like lean into this. His strikes in play percentage, which is how many times does he throw a strike with us and it doesn't result in play, the same. League average.
Is any one pitch significantly worse off?
Well, I mean, the ICR on this four seamer, that is the ideal contact rate, is 60% instead of like the 32 and 40 that we saw the previous 2 years.
So that's
like,
probably the single biggest difference.
Yes. He has allowed 4 home runs on four seamers thus far.
Can we dig deeper on
one
those
last
home
year,
runs?
5 in all of 2022 on four seamers.
Are those home runs, you know, let me see if they're the unicorn home runs, perhaps? Like, are they just like fat? Unicorn home run is a home run that would only be a homer in the park.
57% homer with fly ball rate so far on four seamers.
That's crazy. Now, what would
last year, 10% the year before?
Adding that in, What sort does it make you more on the tipping his fastball in particular situations, or do you think it's something else mechanically executing his fastball, or could it be a simple run of bad luck where when he's missing with his fastball, it's home run city for Joe Musgrove?
It's just got to be like, what the heck? That's so ridiculous and strange. And, you know, I remember talking to Tyon about this last year. Like, dude, you have a really good cutter. He goes, yeah, Brandon Marsh hit like the most perfect cutter up and in as a lefty, and it ruined my confidence in it the entire rest of the year. And maybe it's just that. Maybe it's just when he needs to execute
or throwing it with conviction.
One singular one. Because the thing is, when it comes to pitch analysis, and this is really, it's hard for me to say this because my whole shtick is about granular pitch analysis.
Mm-hmm.
The outlier 5% completely warps the other 95%.
True.
And that might be what's going on here with Musgrove.
Righties and lefties cooking him too. I'm just trying to find if there's a split, if there's a count. Like, I do not know. Like, this is, in a way, the second level analysis eases me up a little bit because everything is so in place outside of this fastball home run issue for Joe Musgrove that you're kind of getting me back in. But I'm just getting annoyed that I can't figure out what it, and I know, you know, we always want to look for the smoking gun, and it's not always there. A lot of times it's a part of five things.
Yeah.
But this, we have narrowed it down. We really have brought it down to fastball home runs right now. What I need to know is, are they going to continue? Is he not executing the fastball consistently? And he's doing it so inconsistently that Musgrove's going to continue to give up homers, or is it a tweak away? That's what I'm curious of. And we can't know that for sure.
Put away rates on his slider and four seamer to lefties are way down.
Okay. So
put away rate is when you are in a two strike count and you throw a pitch, how often does it result in a strikeout? Mm-hmm. So we're talking 22% and 17% for his four seamer in previous years. Against lefties, four seamer is just a 7%, which I assume is just like really like one. and then slider, only 10%, even though that's been like a 23% or 20% or so in the past. And throwing fewer of them in two strike counts. It was 45% against lefties last year. Just 24% of his sliders are now in two strike counts while throwing a lot more early in counts. So, you know, he is changing a little bit in that regard as well. I don't know. I think this is going to be something that, and then keep in mind, the ghastly numbers you do see, of course, do include his first game, which was in Korea, which was five and runs against the Dodgers. And really, you know, since then, it hasn't been like disastrous since. It's not been good.
Exactly.
Four runs, 1-4-3-3.
But then the 7 against Philly.
Six innings. And then, of course, the 7-1 against the Phillies that is now really just...
Those are the bookends, though. Like you said, the middle there would have been a lot easier picture to really kind of get through and say, oh, Musgrove's just been a bit wobbly. But it's the two big bombs there. Really, sorry, five earned against the Dodgers, not the 7 was against.
So we'll see. I mean, obviously, it's not saying that we don't want... We want the double stuff version of Musgrove. It is. I mean, that came with three games of just three strikeouts, right? So there's still some things to mess around with here. But
yeah,
I guess what, you know, bringing it back to the main topic of what do we do with this stuff? Well, when it comes to Musgrove, it's a case where we say, look, you have a storied history. Chris Towers would say history did not begin 4 weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
And we can't be in a position of just saying, well, this is it. He's cooked. And I've certainly said I need to be quicker on the hook for certain guys in my 12 teamers than I have been in the past. I think that's more so for those that do not have the history of Musgrove.
Totally agree. I don't think it's something, I think you can make a mistake by being too quick on a guy up here. And I think draft price should still be guiding you a bit. To Chris's point, 4 weeks, history didn't start 4 weeks ago, meaning your opinion on a player should not have changed so much for a guy that you took as a top 25 pitcher.
Yeah.
I don't think. Like, you can have some concerns, but the closest I would do to anything right now is maybe try to skip a start or two with Musgrove. I am 0% anywhere near cutting in any format, even a 10. I am not out on Musgrove, so despite my negative outlook.
Are you starting him hosting Cincinnati?
Yes.
Yeah, good stuff. There's one other guy that I really don't want to bring up, which is kind of in the same light of Joe Musgrove. We're going to talk about him after this break. You hear the crackle of the fire. Espora and I recline back in our chairs, nodding to each other as we say, of course, Nick, who would be the guy that's like Joe Musgrove, who has a history of just being solid, not necessarily being that overarching ace. He's had some struggles thus far, but we just know that you should have him in your lineup. Obviously, that's Chris Bassett.
I was doing a hound dog imitation there, if you were looking at my face.
Oh, beautiful.
I didn't want to do the actual noise, but yeah. I was hound dogging it. And yeah.
Chris Bassett, do you feel more confident, less confident, or the same as Musgrove?
Probably around the same. Mm-hmm. I will say part of it is a stupid reason. Okay.
What's that?
He did the exact same thing last year.
Well, yeah, sure. Fair enough.
I mean, that's
the reason.
It was
one game last year, but right.
Well, but it was like the same, like ERA and skills and everything. And yes, it was heavily driven by the 9 earned on his season opener. This is pretty heavily driven by 7 earned in his most recent outing.
Yeah.
So this is also kind of just one start, really, because he had a 390 ERA before that. Like, how quickly we change on someone like Bassett. First two starts, 771 ERA. Shaves it down to 390, calm zone. 7 bomb against the Dodgers, which you could have feasibly skipped. You could have feasibly skipped that. Now, I play guys like this, so I'm not talking down. I'm not blasting anybody. I would have been there. Yeah. But you could have skipped this.
Yeah.
The bottom line is he did this exact same thing last year. And the one thing that really stuck out to me is even the 12% walk rate. Because that's the first thing that you're going to notice with Chris Bassett. 5-point jump in walk rate up to 12%. Holy smokes, this is so bad. Literally last year, when he had the 6 outings and a 5.18 ERA through April, it came with a 12% walk rate. From that point forward, once he started kind of tuning it down in early May, 3.43 ERA in 160 innings with 153 Ks. I think you got to ride the weather here. There's enough history. He didn't quite pay the cachet that you did for Joe Musgrove on Chris Bassett, but you paid a decent price in all formats, enough to stick this out. You might skip a start. I'll let you decide that on your own roster. I don't think you should be cutting Bassett, not even in a 10-teamer. I think he's also somebody that I'm more inclined to hold for their history than to try to jump off early and time it right and not hold too long type of deal.
So what is Chris Bassett's bread and butter? What would you say is the thing for him?
Control.
Control. As far as pitch, certain pitch that he throws.
Well, probably his fastball.
Yes. Yeah. The sinker is the weird anomaly that is just this Bassett thing, right? He's had absurdly high strike rates in his career with this, absurdly high zone rates. And his called strike rates have always been hovering or flirting with 30% on it. And what has always been really interesting to me on Chris Bassett's sinker is that it consistently has low ICR marks. That is ideal contact rate, essentially saying, look, he's able to not only steal tons of called strikes that he has about 35% CSW on his pitch routinely, and he does again this year, but also when they actually do swing and put this in play, it's not to their benefit, right? That has changed. It is now a 49% ICR this year so far. And I'm looking into it thinking, okay, maybe there's a higher swing rate. It's actually lower.
So they're being choosier.
Contact rate.
But blasting it when they do choose to swing at Bassett.
And this is something that I think always made me a little weirded out by Bassett, was can they just get complacent chasing the sinker in at bats? And sure, 42%, you say, no, they're swinging less at this pitch. That's fine. But they're going from about an 85% career contact rate to a 91% contact rate this year. That's a very sizable jump. His O contact, which traditionally is around 74%, which is great. You want to see that on a sinker. 94%. Okay, so they're not just getting contact on in the zone stuff, they're getting contact out of the zone effectively, and it's burning him.
Yeah.
And it might be a product of his cutter getting fewer strikes, I should say. as I try as hard as I can to keep up with the less versus fewer thing in journalism. My gosh, if it's an integer, if it's a tangible thing, if it's a nebulous thing, it's less. It's not hard.
I know, but sometimes
it's just better. Further and farther is another one like that. Anyway.
Yep.
So he's getting fewer strikes on his cutter. And that might be part of it too, is that they're just getting a little bit more passive in some way. And then the cutter gets out of the zone, sinker right there. I'm going to go and hit that. The called strike rate is the same. But when contact is made, it's just better. And I have to admit, I mean, it's always been this weird thing with Bassett. He has so many pitches that mm-hmm. he's been able to sneak in the sinker and be that effective. But if batters are going up saying, look, you still throw this 40% of the time, all this other stuff, I don't care. You can do whatever you want. I'm or going
throw
to
throw your kitchen sink all over right. the place. Yeah.
The stinker is going to show up and I'm going to be here for it.
I'm going to hunt that sucker. Yeah.
Right. So it is an interesting thing. I think as the season goes on, and this is really one of the marks of what I wanted to bring up today mm-hmm. was a guy like Bassett. Maybe he notices this and he adapts.
Yes. Yeah.
And there are,
I can certainly see that.
It's a major difference between veterans and rookies. And
absolutely.
I think another element to us being okay with rostering these older pitchers is because we also have to trust that they're able to adapt.
Yep.
That they're able to figure out what the problem is, find a way to get through games better than guys who are 5 years in and less in the majors, who haven't really gone through and understand themselves as much.
Yep.
So that is what Bassett's going to have to fix. I think he's going to, but at least we have a little bit more of an understanding of what needs to be tweaked here. And yeah, really, it's just a 7-run game that bamboozled him against the Dodgers because it was a 3.90 ERA anyway.
It really sinks you there with Bassett. But now you've given folks something to look for as as they're riding here. If they want to keep running with him and analyze what's going on with Chris Bassett. So I love that breakdown. That was fantastic. Again, I would stick with him, folks. Just keep riding. And at the very least, you can bench, but don't cut him yet. Give him a chance to work out of this. That's a great call. Was there anybody else that stood out to you as somebody you really wanted to pinpoint there? Do we really, we covered two pretty good bases there because they are a bit different, unless you have another profile.
I mean, is there someone that you think is, so I, there is one other, and I think it's the other side to me of the, we're talking about the older guys who are doing poorly.
Underperforming, yeah.
Right, and underperforming, thank you. And we talked a little bit about, say, Garrett Crochet and Brady Singer and like what they're going through. Mm-hmm. There's Ronel Blanco in this.
Great name to bring up.
And Blanco is, I think, a fantastic example of, to me, of someone who surprised us. I tried to do all the logical things and I was wrong. And
trying to be cautious with it, you mean?
Well, it was even that his first start was a no-hitter.
Yeah.
Fatigue would come. Verlander's supposed to return.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting kicked out. Next start is the Rangers. Should be bad. Sorry, we'll see him later. I'm looking forward to that. But he hasn't left.
And no, he just keeps dominating. Good.
Actually, honestly, the worst performance I saw from him was against the Nationals. And then he just recovered and did great in Mexico City.
And survived in Mexico City.
And everyone was yelling at me. I put him in a questionable start. I was like, I don't care. I think he's great.
I love it. I was not. I was more scared.
I mean,
I did go with Fromber. Easier to do, but
Fromber's throwing a slider now, and you got 10 whiffs on it,
bro. What? If that's legit, watch out. But I love that you're bringing him up with Blanco because we're a month in. Like you said, there was reason to be prudent, thinking that he's just going to be first man out. That is definitely not the case now. And if push comes to shove, you got to think it's Hunter Brown first man out. Frankly, they don't have the luxury to be kicking anybody out. So everyone's in right now. So with Blanco, what are you seeing from the 30-year-old journeyman here? Not even a journeyman. I think it's always been with Houston, but we just use that name sometimes with older guys.
He's 30 years old and really getting his full opportunity. Obviously,
I guess his His journey has been through the minors of Houston's system.
I'm cool with that.
Okay. There are skills here. Is there enough to bet on when the regression strikes? Like is even keel Ronel Blanco still somebody I want when the 173 BABIP comes back to earth?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a 4.4 hit per nine, which is just okay.
That's so filthy. And he contributes to that, but it's not sustainable.
Right. Hit per nine for me is always a really fun one because we look at BABIP, but I think at times you see 175. It's a really good stat BABIP to just like, okay, cool. We quickly know something's wrong.
Yeah.
Right. It's beautiful. It's how you use it. It's great. And you also see the 5.6 home run fly ball rate. And it's like, okay, fine. That's probably going to be different too. We can check that off and it's thumbs up. I often utilize hit per nine like I did with Musgrove because we just know he's not going to have an 11 plus hit per
nine.
So that's a good thing there too. And you know that there's not going to be a 4.4. Generally, as a frame of reference, the MLB average right now among starting pitchers is 9.6. And that's the top 200 in batters faced. And by the way, that average always gets better as the season goes on.
Yep.
Because in the beginning of the year, the guys that are really bad don't last. So
they start weeding out of the sample.
Right. And exactly right. So really what you see is about one per inning. So nine is the average.
That's fair.
And those that are great in fantasy generally hover around eight are the ones that you are like, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. And seven is like, oh man, if you get underneath seven, if you have like a six or something, it's like, whoa.
If you're doing that with great skills,
that is
a Cy Young candidate type season.
Right. So if you see like a five something or a four something, like, no, that's a great run. Sweet. Not going to last, especially for someone who isn't considered like a top five starter in the majors.
Correct.
So 4.4, we know that's not going to last. But what is Blanco doing? I mean, he's throwing tons of strikes with secondaries and he's actually become, I think, it's akin to Blake Snell.
He has the high walk, right?
Well, he is not making mistakes. It's just a 5.5% four seamer mistake rate. And mistake rate is defined by us as a pitch inside the zone that has doubled the chance of allowing a hit.
Got it.
So he isn't giving in with his fastball. None of his pitches have above an 8% mistake rate. And keep in mind, the league average of like mistake rate is super high. It's not close to that. It's like closer to something like 8-10% or so, right? So it's closer to 10. None of them are above 8. And that's by design, I think. I think he's really pitching around being careful with that four-seamer up and out of the zone a ton. And allowing the changeup, having faith in the slider and changeup inside the zone a ton. Same with the cutter, same with the curve. All of these are above 40% zone rates. 55% on his slider, which means that Blanco's slider has a 74% strike rate. Meanwhile, the changeup, oh my gosh, this changeup. 17% ICR right now.
He is filthy.
Surprising with this. And what's happening is like you think of the Blake Snell blueprint as being like top third of the zone. And then bottom third and below, but he's taken that and like moved it up so that the changeup is like middle down and then fourth thing was like above a lot. Right.
Yeah.
And that's clearly working. 33% CSW on Blanco's changeup, 20% swinging strike rate. It's amazing. And it's just gotten all these outs for him. So, you throw in a slider that he trusts, a cutter that is helpful as well. Sometimes you see a curveball. Sometimes it's like a lollipop that just like, please get me a strike. Okay, cool. I apologize. It's not really a lollipop. It's not one of those like boom, boom. Yeah. But it's there just to try and to be early. It's 100% early percentage. So that is the first two pitches of the at bat, really, or 1-1 counts. And this works to me. I mean, it's not the most dominant four seamer, and I think he's doing it right. 16 vert is good. It's kind of steep. He has decent extension at 6.8. It's 93-94. It's really more of a pitch that's just trying to mess with guys and then letting the slider and the changeup do everything. So I'm a fan of this. I think this does stick, and I think the Astros win more games. I've adjusted completely on this.
I like where you're at with Ronel Blanco, and I agree with the full analysis here. As he's somebody that even when it was looking like he might get kicked out, I was giving the same advice that I'm giving with Spencer Turnbull. Hold, do not try to be preemptive and like, oh, he's going to get kicked out of the rotation. I'm just going to make the move now and get the jump. Wait until you get word. Of course, injuries started to strike Christian Javier, and then Frommer went out for a spell, and Renaud was able to clear this runway now where he has five great starts, and he's not going anywhere, and they're not going to Vargas rule him. First off, again, I want to reiterate, they can't. Even if they really wanted to Vargas rule him, who are they going to put in? Nolan Ryan? I don't think so. They don't have backups. So that helps him too. That gives Renaud Blanco a bit more runway. But I think with as well as he's pitched, he would get a few bumps to really show what's what, you know, especially if he has some like Babbitt Fest where it all comes back at once and it's 11 hits with seven of them being bleeders and dying quail type garbage hits. They wouldn't hold that against him, but he's going to get some real run here. I agree. They're going to be a better team. Now I will say this. I know we don't always like analyze the game at large, especially from a non-fantasy angle, but I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. Even this early, historically you do not dig out of 9 and 19 holes, and particularly when you don't have that good of a team, right? Like I don't think they're good enough to do it is the real thing. Like, you know, if Javier gets back soon, that will certainly help. Hunter Brown would need to turn around. The bullpen would need to be like, the ifs are starting to pile up and the games are running out. That said, from today forward, I think they'll play as an above 500 team, which keeps Renaud Blanco's win probability strong.
Yeah, the Fangraphs right now has Astros at a 48.5% chance.
That's entirely too high, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously expecting a lot of improved performance after the first month.
And it's just the data. It's not like it's my boss is behind a curtain.
This is based on Zips and some Borski stuff. One thing I did want to mention, by the way, about Blanco, which is so interesting. It's something that I'm discovering a lot this year. I made Kyle Bland and the crew add two stats. One's called strikes and play percentage, and the other is balls and play percentage. And the reason I wanted that is just get an understanding of, okay, you're in strikes with this. Is this for the purpose of CSW, or is it for the purpose really of getting those strikes, you know, and turning into outs? And it really was super apparent with me with Kyle Bradish, where he should not want his fastball in play, right? He wanted to limit that. That used to be a high 20% plus ball in play percentage. And then he brought it down to like 10, 12. So with Renaud Blanco, what's very interesting is that his ball in play percentage is 20th percentile. So it's just 12.6% on four seamers, which is low, which is good because that is the easier one to hit. Meanwhile, his slider, 100th percentile ball in play percentage. 30% of his sliders are in play. Okay. It's 96th percentile strikes in play percentage. Okay. So that's an ICR of 30%. That has a 133 BABIP. Like, its hit luck is just minus one. Like, he's gotten one benefit of a hit on those sliders. That's how it's crazy. Working. Those sliders are what they're putting into play. And that's working for him. It's not just like his fastball is really bad and he should be like, well, sure, but he's not allowing those in play. He's getting those out of the zone. It's an interesting way of, I wonder how much worse the BABIP's going to get. It's going to get worse. He's going to allow more hits. With the ball and play percentage, if this split is somewhat real, then he will be a good hit suppressor.
And an upper end guy for Renaud Blanco. And then what that can also do, if you have more confidence there, and it's hard to ever have like full confidence in, because it's still hit suppression and it can still get foolish on you. But then you'll take less consideration of worrying about the 11% walk rate.
Right.
If you believe, like we all know, is the 173 BABIP's going to regress, but like Nick's saying, if it doesn't regress up to 310, but instead goes up to 250, 260, which would be in contention for one of the best metrics, one of the best rankings in the league on BABIP for Renaud Blanco, don't get hung up on the walks then. I mean, you can still care about them, but that's going to be where the base runners are going to come from if the hits aren't going to regress all the way back up to the top. So that's a great call out there. Where do I find the ball and play percentage?
Yeah, that is in that is underneath plate discipline. This is all on the player pages of Pitcher List. Go check them out. We have a lot of new tabs, new things that we've done. Kyle is actually creating an article going over all the new updates that we've had this year as we continue to roll them out.
I spend so much time on the player pages.
It's really fun to be able to just go through and be like, oh yeah, right, that makes sense. With this thing, we have this new thing called Ideal Pitch Result, which is about how many of these pitches do they throw that give them only chances to do positive things. And then if it's a ball in play that is not it, or if it's a ball, or if it's a ball, any ball in play that is giving them an opportunity to not have the best outcome, right? Which is a strikeout.
That
so
is
it's an interesting really concept intriguing. Of like how many guys lean into strikeouts and everything, how many guys lean into that contact and play, which is kind of fun. But that's another whole story for another time.
Well, that was great. I think we looked at three really interesting profiles, especially with somebody who is veteran aged, but new to the landscape there with Ronald Blanco, and then a couple veterans in Bassett and Musgrove, and hopefully give you guys some ideas on what to be looking at, add to your toolbox, and kind of help you out through this first month as we turn the calendar.
It's about skills. It's about what is changing, what is believable, what isn't, and to never reconsider that a pitcher can be different. Now, don't say that they are innately, you know, really understand how they're getting those results every single time, and see, okay, if this keeps having success, what is it? It's this thing, and that is an anomaly and not going to stick. Then okay, you know, we're not going to see, what was it, 48% CSW yesterday from Bryce Wilson sinker. We know that's not going to stick. Okay.
Probably not.
Not going to be it. So those are the things that we can do. And it changes as we go a month in. And we can't just be like, well, this is who he was this in February, so we're not going to change it now. Like, well,
exactly.
You
got to be open to it. And I know we've gone both ways saying like, be open to things, but then don't cut these veterans. You got to thread the needle on things, right? There are no hard, fast rules on this stuff. That's kind of the beauty of the game, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
One thing I would humbly request of everyone who uses second level stats and everything, please don't overreact to one start. That's it. Just positive, negative. But especially on pitch usage, sometimes we don't know what the game plan was.
Yeah.
They might have shelved a pitch by design. We might not have agreed with it. We might have said, Team B does not hit your slider. Why would you pocket your slider? He might have been told to.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's every time, but like, just don't overreact to it. Don't say, oh, he lost that pitch because he didn't throw it for a start. There are team plans out there. And I'm only like keying in on this because I've learned a little bit more about it of like, there are plans, especially with these young guys, and they're told, don't throw this.
Right.
And the analytics department, we might not agree with it because we might have said, hey.
Oh, I will use my caps inside the SP Roundup shouting it.
Exactly.
And sometimes a great point is that, right, maybe it just comes back next time. They go, the mistake I've made is, I mean, good example was last week with Garrett Crochet against the Twins. He was facing righties and he just thought, I don't throw my slider against righties. And I thought, what are you doing? Why aren't you throwing your slider? And I should realize, right, it was such a right-handed lineup.
Yeah.
I used to do that. My classic example is Carlos Carrasco with change-ups and sliders. I'm like, where's it that night? It's only because he's a two-pitch guy against each side. So that's where I learned my lesson with that. So that's a fantastic point. And I will continue to be my arrogant self in my armchair yelling in the SB Roundup about like,
but I like when you do
cutter
that
the right way.
Because
but no, then, that's a different thing that you're saying. I'm just saying.
Like, well, yeah, with the cutter piece, you gotta have Dylan Cease using the cutter. But I like to look for those different things too. Like when I'm reading your roundup and you say he didn't use this pitch, I was like, oh, well, now I'm going to key on it next. Because then if he faces a lineup where he should be using the slider and doesn't use it, then I can give it some credence. But anyway, we got some games coming up
there. We're already at run through this one and we've got games. So we're going to do that after this. We're going to, of course, go over last week's streamer sit of the week, star of the week in our one game matchup and talk about the guys that we like for the week ahead as Sport and I battle coming up on the Fireside Chat. I assume you updated the scoreboard.
Yes, 9-8 you.
Beautiful. And we are back. So this is one of the fun things that we do with the Fireside Chat is it's a good environment for Sport and I to have a scoreboard the entire year. We have four games that we do with each other. That sounds very strange. I'll never say that again. That is about picking pitchers every single week. And last week, after Spore swept the floor with me,
you took your broom back.
I took it back. It was Clark Schmidt and Casey Mize as our streamers. I had Clark Schmidt, 18 points. Casey Mize went 7.7. That was a very disappointing outing for Mize.
Yeah. He didn't pitch poorly, but I'm not trying to fish for a dub or anything. It was just bland from a scoring standpoint.
Yeah. Reed Detmers was my Civ of the week, and I'm not happy. Honestly, I kind of wanted to go the entire season failing at Civ.
Because it's guys that we like. Ostensibly, they're on some level of quality, and we're kind of like rooting against them. But no, I was indeed dead wrong. You were right on Detmers, 2 points.
The Hicks thing. So you had Jordan Hicks against the Pittsburgh Pirates. That's it. He was different.
Yes, he was.
It was a splitter all of a sudden, being like 11 whiffs. And what's interesting about Hicks is that his sinker is this foundation inside the zone that could have kind of looks wobbly, and it's a very justifiable sit because it's like, well, yeah, he doesn't have a secondary is working, and if this sinker isn't inducing all of this weak contact, then like this is not going to work. That's a pretty easy probability.
I wouldn't have sat that Jordan Hicks, if I can be clear. It's not obvious. The one with a 17% swing strike rate, the nasty splitty.
Oh, well,
I wouldn't be sitting that
guy.
You
knew that. That's what
exactly.
I'm saying.
That's the. I'm adding to your joke saying that like, version I would have loved. Right. So I'll take the fat out. That,
you're like, yeah, he hasn't gotten the secondaries. He has this foundation that's kind of wobbly. Well, the foundation's still there. And now he has a splitter getting all these whiffs. And it's like, oh, yeah, this is pretty cool now.
That's intriguing.
I don't know, of course, what do you know, splitter not consistent, more at 11.
Exactly.
But then there's a sweeper too that could show up. So hopefully this is a good sign for Hicks moving forward.
I hope he takes that splitter to Philly. Solid matchup, some key lefties.
Yeah.
Could be, and if he can survive there, that's going to really boost the confidence for me and Jordan Hicks.
Just throw the splitter anytime. It's fine. Splitters are like, against the same handedness.
Same handedness. Yeah. They don't have to be opposite hand, but it could give them something to attack Harper.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely. Star of the week. I was hoping for Edward Cabrera to soar. He just got worse. I mean, I still believe in Edward Cabrera, but that was against the Nationals keep ruining everything. And Jose Buhto against the Cardinals was pretty mediocre, unfortunately.
Yep.
Are you going for Buhto against the Cubs?
15s. I don't think so in 12s. I think I'm still holding though. I think he's a team streamer for me. I want to keep him on the roster.
He's moving.
Yeah.
He's got enough of a kitchen sink. His changeup can be good enough. The Cardinals are not a good offense.
That's the thing. They're not playing well right now.
No, Arenado looks horrific. I am selling him everywhere if I have him.
He really does. And I was buying back in a month in, not feeling great about that.
No way. I really feel like this is not it. He just looks sluggish.
I think that's a great phrase for it. He just looks like he's playing in slow motion.
The one game matchup, I remember this last week saying, I felt bad taking it. And you took one for the team. And I went with Aaron Nola against the Padres. You took Joe Musgrove, the aforementioned. Mm-hmm. It could not have been more different. So I was granted a gift after Spore went 3-0 with me.
Still so generous.
I applaud that for you. Thank you. So
it's
kind of fun here. We're through five episodes. This is the sixth episode officially of the Fireside Chat after dozens that we've done before. But no, this is the new era. And it's 9-8. I'm up by just one here. So it's anybody's game.
It really, really is. I think I'll be back and forth all year.
I wonder. Yeah, I don't really think either one of us is going to actually pull away here. So, of course, the first one. Streamers, who is your streamer for this week?
So this one's preying on a team a little bit because I don't love where the pitcher's at, but he is coming off a good start against that aforementioned St. Louis team. It is Jose Quintana coming off 8 innings of 1-run ball. Now it was 3 Ks, a walk, 3 hits, right? Like he was preying on another team. We're spinning it forward by preying on Tampa Bay and the struggles that they're dealing with right now. I think he can get off another good outing here. Jose Quintana, this type of guy that I don't know. I like, and in 12s, I have been smarter about not getting stuck with too many Tobys and streaming them the way they should be, but this is where you stream them. They're bottom 10 team in WOBA against lefties this year. Tampa Bay is right now. They're struggling. They just got swept by the White Sox. I think there's a decent win probability with lineup and bullpen support. Sign me up for Jose Quintana. Even though he is only 1-2, I think it's at least decent probability the way the Mets are playing versus the way the Rays are playing.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think this is a great call. 10% rostered. Remember, these are streamers at 20% or lower rostered in Fantasy Pros. And Quintana is a guy that's just really rooted in good command. And his secondary command has been there all year. It's really just been a sinker and four seamer that have been shaking anyway. But the Rays are just so bad. They just got swept by the White Sox, man.
Like, and in fairness, Mets not playing as well. They dropped the last two series. They had hit a nice little streak and then they kind of fell back. But I still prefer their arrow right now versus the Rays. The Rays look, they're in disarray, to use an easy pun.
There it is. Well done. I'm the one with the puns. What is this? Disarray, I guess.
That's every pitcher they have, disarray, I guess. Cy Young candidate for 3 months.
I guess he's got the new hat. Okay. I'm going with Trevor Rogers, which is kind of funny because I've been saying Trevor Rogers for like a month now.
I know.
And the thing is, the skills of Trevor Rogers, I don't think are that bad.
He just agreed against
the Nationals, where he went 5-for-17 slider strikes. And I remember looking at the strike zone plot and being like, oh man, slider looked great tonight. And I looked at it, I was like, 5-for-17? What? And all of the like competitive ones, like, all at the very bottom of the zone or right out of it that I would just normally circle. It's like, this is the greatest thing you want. All of them were balls.
Oh, wow.
So it's just, okay. Like, that's not going to be. Maybe there's something the Nats were just keyed in on. I don't know.
Division rival. Maybe they've got.
I mean, that could just be the ump being like, nah, I'm good, bro.
True.
I mean, I don't know. He gets the Athletics now. He's doing the Blake Snell blueprint. Changeups and sliders are down. Four seamers and sinkers are up. I love this. It's the good command that we wanted last year, also with both secondaries working.
Yep.
I think that Trevor Rogers should be better than what he has been. So I'm going to go with him at 7% rostered against Oakland. So Trevor Rogers.
I'm staying bought in on Trevor Rogers. Like, I'm right there with you. Like,
there we go. Good.
If you watch him, he looks like he's pitching well.
There.
Like, it's right there. So stick with him.
Like, these 300 runs, I think we get kind of lost in like, that's just one earned run off and like two strikeouts.
Exactly. I that's a group. Please underscore that again. Boy, what did you just say? Because I talked over you a little bit.
Innings, 300 runs, and we see 5-2. Then it's like, oh, cool. Yeah, definitely Trevor Rogers again.
Yeah, like, well, exactly.
All difference. Sit of the week. Who do you have here? This is
so for this one.
On fantasy.
Yeah, I'm picking back on the, you know, going the opposite of. Actually, I don't think if they're matching. I don't know if they're matching up or not. But I'm going to Tampa Bay here with Aaron Civale. They are matching up, so I'm doing the start and the sit from the same game. This is a first, a fireside first, baby.
We should have done this for the one game matchup. This is your own one game matchup against.
Sports. Yeah, this is my own one game matchup. I will say, Civale is a guy that I'm maybe not that far off of. The same path I am with Rogers, where the results aren't there, but I keep looking at the skills and I'm like, what's the disconnect here?
Yeah.
As a Ray, he's been a strikeout machine with great walk rates. So great strikeout minus walk, but the home runs have gone through the roof and become a big problem for Aaron Civale. So it's a 1-7 homer 9 and 9-3 hits. Now he is more of that 8 something hits, but he's 8.3 for his career, meaning 9.3 isn't so far out of pocket. And I wonder if he's trading, getting these strikeouts for being more hittable in the zone, like trading basically some control or some trading command in for some control and strikeouts that come with it. I haven't done the full deep dive on Civale, but now we are on 78 innings, excuse me, as a Ray of this kind of model. Great strikeouts, great walks, but too many hits, too many homers. He's my sit of the week, Aaron Civale against the Mets. Not cutting him, just sitting him.
It's so funny. You're going to ask, like, Nick, how do you get this so quickly? It's because their player pages, as Yancey Eden quoted, is like, oh, you made the page for podcasters. So I'm like, yes.
Exactly. For easy pull-ups.
So it's kind of crazy. You mentioned the home run thing. I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting. I was like, oh, let me take a look at this. He has 5 main pitches. Cutter, sinker, curveball, sweeper, four-seamer.
Should he, by the way? Should he have 5?
So, that's an interesting question. I think splitting up between... like cutter, curveball are always going to be the main two. Four seamer is safe for 2 strike counts. Sweeper and sinker are really safe more so for right-handers, while the four seamer curve and cutter is safe more for left-handers, I'd say. So it makes sense to me.
Okay.
The thing is, you said he had a home run problem. Of those 5 pitches, which one do you think has more than 2 home runs allowed?
Of all of those pitches, I'm going to guess the sinker.
Curveball, sweeper, four-seamer.
Is it the sinker?
None.
So it's just 2 on the spread cutter out.
And then 1 on the other 4.
So there is no problem child.
Right. it's just like, well, this stinks. This is annoying.
And it is very annoying.
Probably not going to stick around.
Again, our desire to find the smoking gun, it's not there.
That is the smoking gun of like,
yeah,
goodness, you know,
that's fair. That it's just, so it was there last year though, too, like the same profile. And I'm just wondering what's missing from Savali then, because we love the spike and strikeout minus walk, but it's not delivering any results. He's a 5-something ERA as a Ray full time.
Yeah, it is absolutely interesting. I think, seeing him pull a little bit away from the curveball and cutter focus. I mean, last year it was like 37% cutter and sweet and curveball was closer to 25%. And I've said a lot, like, I want to see Savali at 60% plus curveball cutter every time.
And you said those are the lefty weapons.
Well, those are the ones that are more lefty, but really just over his career, it's just been, those have been the big guys for him.
Well, I bring that up to point out that he has a 240-point platoon split so far this year, too. Now, platoon splits in general, always want to be careful with them. In a 6-start sample, want to be even more careful with them.
Right.
There's a huge BABIP difference, and that probably explains the vast majority of the split, but lefties are getting him more. 3 homers in 52 plate appearances, whereas righties have 3 and 86 against Savali. So when you bring up those pitches, I'm wondering, does that go hand in hand? His 2 lefty pitches aren't working. He's getting beat up by lefties. Voila. Or further analysis. What do we need?
Yeah, that's super interesting. I mean, I think the curveball is just can hit too hard. 57% ICR so far against right-handers is just no.
Woof.
That cannot be it. Sinker is a little bit more over the plate than you want. The cutter is still very effective. Just not quite as many strikes.
Okay.
And it's just not clicking quite yet, I think, for Savali.
So is it Musgrovian where we're like, it's in there and this is just kind of a range of outcomes thing for Savali?
I mean, look, the first 4 starts were great.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. He hasn't been bad all year.
The last 2. And I think it was just a little bit worse recently, and he should be fine, honestly.
Okay.
I can see how...
We're sticking by Savali in the long term, though.
Yeah, sticking for the long term. I can see how he's in a dearth of performance at the moment. Mm-hmm. Dearth of being the man he's supposed to be. So that makes a ton of sense. And it's like Savali has always been this rhythm guy.
Yes. Too,
right? Even last year, it was like, okay, he's got it going right. And I'm like, oh man, okay. Doesn't have that cutter working right. The curve isn't going right. And we just got to hope that it kind of clicks in soon. Also, I think the Rays would be able to figure this out. So. But yeah, it is not fun at the moment. I'm going to tell you my sit of the week as well as start of the week that we have to go over. And of course, our 1-game matchup. We're going to do that after this break. So my sit of the week is going to be like, I'm ready for everyone to just be angry at me.
I considered
Nick Lodolo against the Orioles. And I've considered him a cherry bomb for a long time. Lodolo has this really nice 2-plane curveball. It's beautiful. It sometimes is amazing and sometimes it's not quite as good. And I will always have hesitation with pitchers where they just have 1 elite pitch and it's not a 4-seamer.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Lodolo's 4-seamer, you could kind of argue is a sinker because it has the most horizontal break of any 4-seamer. And then it's 94th percentile in drop. So that's really a sinker. And then you have a changeup that was actually really good against the Padres. That's awesome.
He calls it a sinker, by the way. Just
there you go.
Go with that there.
But this is the Orioles.
Yes.
Orioles
are in
really
scared territory.
Good, and they're also better against lefties than they are righties. And this isn't in Camden. This is in Sin City. That's my term for it. I don't know how to spell ballpark. Is it 1 or 2 words?
For their ballpark, I usually put it as 1 word. I think I always put it as 1 word now.
I see it as GABP.
Yes, exactly. And we do say that. So that would make you think that it was 2 words. Or is the park, is the P capitalized? You know?
Even though Boba has his fantastic Great American Small Park, which is so good.
That's amazing.
Right.
I love that. People have been calling it that pretty much since they started hitting bombs out of it. Coors right? Light. Sin City is very good because you're coming Sin to Sin City if you start your starters there.
So,
by the way, I know I'm going to let you finish on Lodolo. I almost put Green or Lodolo. I was right on, keyed in on this series for Sin of the Week as well. I'm terrified of these guys, yeah. But I have decided that if you roster them, you need to just ride it.
This is what a hipster is.
I know.
Producing pitcher.
And that's why I don't draft. I try not to draft these guys. I know. I shouldn't say I don't, because I do sometimes.
And that's crazy. This is what I did with Mitch Keller, Hunter Green, and Lodolo. Is I had them like at 60 or 70, and everyone is just like pitchforks. And I understand, like, end of year, if they go 30 starts, anyone who goes 30 starts, by the way, is going to be a top 45 starter.
That's a survivorship bias type right. deal, though, right?
Absolutely. And I hear all the time also in the preseason, this guy was on the player rater at blank. And I'm like, because he went X amount of starts and he got more than 10 wins.
And your second one more important, by the way.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
Tell me how many wins they had if you're going to cite me on player. And I use player rater stuff too, but I try to underscore that's influenced by 9 wins or something like that. That's a great call out.
It's so I can't do it. Lodolo, nope. I will say I have constantly believed more in. Recently, Hunter Green is starting to look like he can actually maybe locate his four-seamer upstairs. So I gave him in the list. I think they're like one after another, but I want to
keep them very close often.
They're always there. So, but I've always thought in my head that Lodolo at least has a slightly better ability to command pitches. I think just a little bit.
Same thing in my brain. Like he has that profile, even though it hasn't really borne out entirely in their pitching. Yeah. I have them on that same level.
That sometimes is more apparent than, remember the splitter and curveball from Hunter Green?
Yes. Yes.
Remember?
Yes.
Nick Pollock remembers. Okay.
Remembers.
I'm terrified of this against Baltimore.
I'm actually with it.
Right. Strikeouts are obviously still a thing. And moving from our sits of the week, Nick Lodolo, Aaron Civale, we're going to go to Star of the Week. Star of the Week is a fun one. It's it has to be underneath 50% rostered on Fantasy Pros, and it's the idea of someone that's going to jump more in the limelight and get more respect, I think, across the fantasy community. You could say in previous weeks, you could say it could be Mitchell Parker, it could be Jose Soriano, it could be even things like Ronel Blanco becoming that star of the week, Ryan Pepio getting that attention. Who is your star of the week, Paul?
So mine goes today, so you won't be able to act on it in terms of, going and picking him up where he's available in those shallower formats. But I am very excited about Jack Flaherty. I am going back to the well on somebody. He was my first star of the week all the way back when we did episode 2. But I'm back because he's done nothing to dissuade me from sticking with him. I love what Jack Flaherty's doing so far this year. And frankly, it's time for the results to kind of join with the skills. The skills are on fire at 26% strikeout minus walk. He's been a lot of fun to watch. The fact that he's 0-1 through 5 starts and has a 4.91 ERA. It's so frustrating. Some of it's on him, the 1-5 homer 9. Hits running a little hot as well at 9.2. I think both of those are fixable with the way he's pitching right now. I love the 29% K rate, 15% swing strike rate. He revenge game today too. I know there's a lot of memes about that, and I'm mostly memeing too. I don't think he's going to necessarily be better because it's St. Louis. As far as I know, he didn't leave there acrimoniously after the trade, but he's going to want to show out. So I think he's going to have a big start here in game one of the doubleheader, Jack Flaherty.
Definitely. Good call. And by the way, I just realized I had a whole streaming image I was going to show and talk about before. And if you want to know about that, you got to come onto the stream. I'll show it to you. Just request this ridiculous chart.
Well, part of it was
quickly. Go ahead.
Well, we thought we were going to get into it because we weren't sure how deep our combo of the week was going to take us. But it ended up, as expected, we should have known that it was going to take us as far as we need. Either show it on your stream or we talk about it next week because it was a really insightful topic. I really, really did like it.
Fun topic about when is a good time during the year to actually, when
to do streaming.
Expect the peaks and valleys of being able to stream features. And there are some consistencies there.
If you do it on playback, ping me before you start it so I can make sure I'm in there.
Absolutely, we'll do. So just request it, guys, if you want to see that. So my star of the week is someone who appeared out of nowhere last
week. Love this.
I didn't know who he was, and as I always do, I always watch, if it's a debut, if I've never seen this guy, I will always watch this game and be like, all right, who is this? Mm-hmm. And I actually made Kyle Bland create two things for me. One is yesterday's four seamers, which is a Google sheet that covers the last 8 days of baseball. and says, great, these are the four Seamer metrics of what I call the Fantastic Four, the four elements of what would cause a fan or a pitcher, a batter fanning.
Amazing.
That is miles per hour extension, vert, IVB, and height adjusted VAA. So attack angle of the pitch, right? How flat it is, how steep it is.
Is that a public board or is that a private?
That is PL Pro, yesterday's four seamers.
I got to get on this PL Pro thing. You got to heard of this website.
You might have heard of him. What I did for Kyle, actually just for me internally, is he has one that is pulling the live data. So I get it that night as I write that
right away.
Melt season next day. And I saw Tobias Myers before I even watched him. And I was like, wait, this can't be right. You can't have an IVB of 19 on his four seamer.
And yet he does.
It's not even steep. Because he gets a decent amount of extension, it's 1.1 height adjusted VA, which is slightly above average as flat. It's decent extension. It's 93. His first game had a PLV, and keep in mind, PLV is like, you see five on a four seam, like, oh, actually, that's for a four seam, that's pretty good. Mm-hmm. The league average is 4.97. When you get to like 5.5, that's like, whoa, that is an elite four seamer in the league. His first game, small sample size, was a 6.15.
Holy smokes. That's Tobias Myers for the Brewers. That's nutty.
Right? And now 6.07 after two games.
And still wonderful.
Two major factors I do want to amplify here is, one, location is a huge thing.
Okay.
That's the difference between Stuff Plus and PLV. We're closer to Pitching Plus in this way.
Got it.
We are actually putting out our PLV Stuff Plus soon. And we're still fine-tuning it. There are things that we don't really like about it, some things we do like. So Tobias Myers nailed the top of the zone. That's the first element here. It's like he's really good at not giving up pitches in the middle zone. In fact, he has a 0% mistake rate on these four seamers that he throws 37% of the time. Okay. That's amazing. Second is that he's not making giant waste mistakes. So PLV, if it's a big waste pitch, that's a zero PLV.
Got it.
Right?
So his window's tighter too between his best and his worst.
Exactly. So he doesn't have those pitches that are dragging down the PLV.
Yeah.
And I want to make that clear as well, which I've actually talked to Kyle a lot about this, about philosophically, do we want to remove the bottom 5% because we just assume that everyone's going to have that? And that's dragging down PLV so much, I think, that 5% of zeros versus
might like hide some gems.
Threes and fours and whatever. And there's all these zeros at the bottom. So maybe on one hand you said, no, we want to, everyone's going to have that. So like, let's incorporate that. On the other side,
maybe add it.
People messes it up. I don't know.
Or maybe add it in addition to the standard one that includes all of it. Maybe there's, what is it, the 95th percentile or whatever?
Right. Yeah, maybe there's a 95th percentile a PLV or like a, yeah, something like that.
Something like that that has the adjustment. But if you want the raw to see everything, you can still get that.
Yeah, that's a very good idea as well. We don't want to overwhelm, be like, what the heck should we use, guys?
That's fair.
It's always tough with this. But that's always what I like to think is just like, let's just create all of the things and then someone will tell us which one's the best.
True. Let everyone study all of them and then we'll hack them down. But the problem is if you have them all out.
Tobias Myers though.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Sorry. I was going to take another tangent.
I love this stuff. This is
let's go Tobias Myers.
He has a cutter, slider and curveball as well. And also a changeup. It's like, he's a kitchen sink guy.
Mm-hmm.
And when I see a kitchen sink guy like this, who theoretically like has a good enough cutter to get strikes with and a slider that hopefully misses some bats and same maybe with a changeup over time in the four seamer, I'm like, wait, this is kind of like Cutter Crawford. And I go, that's kind of great. Mm-hmm. He went against the Yankees in his second start, which is unfortunate. And he's already gotten the home run bug. I believe he's allowed four home runs so far.
Yeah, 2.7 home runs so far.
In one game, I believe, against the Yankees. However, I don't know. I feel that Tobias Myers is a very interesting start. He's going against the Cubs this week. I was actually even tempted to make him the stream pick of the week because the Cubs are kind of hurt at the moment. And if you think about the Brewers as a whole, they don't have much in their rotation.
I was going to get into that. So keep going. Yeah.
What the heck? Like Tobias
Myers.
You can do some things. You have a complete runway here.
Yes.
You do well. Great. You're not leaving. And Craig
even if you struggle, you're going to get some chances because who are they going to turn to? They're as bad a shape as Houston right now. They don't have reinforcements.
Okay. Which is the young kids would get pulled too early by Craig Council.
That's funny.
And that's gone. All right. No more of that. So I'm
yeah, we're letting Myers pitch. Well, and he is a 26-year-old who threw 140 innings last year, too. There should not be restrictions here. And they simply put, might need him to try to grind out a .130 or so. And, you know, he might be one of those guys, if he doesn't quite fix the home runs, Tobias Myers might be somebody who runs a little bit of a higher ERA. But if it comes with the great whip, decent win chance, solid strikeout potential, then you're running him as a streamer in 12s and probably somebody that you're keeping team streamer in 15s. So I think there's something here. Curious where you're at, just as a quick tangent as we wrap up, on Milwaukee as a whole. They've been playing so well, Nick. But as we point out, it's Freddy Peralta and kind of a merry band of goofs, right? Like not trying to be super nasty or anything, but it's Colin Ray, Joe Ross, Tobias Myers, Bryce Wilson. Are they a legitimate contender here? They don't have reinforcements coming back necessarily either. DL Hall is probably the only one of note that's going to come back from injury. Aaron Ashby's in the minors. Can the Milwaukee development machine piece this together here? Do they have anybody that like is a Robert Gasser on your radar? Are they legitimate contenders with this rotation is the general question.
I would say no.
I think that's going to hurt.
I think
them.
The biggest concern about Freddy Peralta has always been his consistency. I moved him up into the top five because his four-seamer has been so good. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's really looked a lot like his second half self outside of his most recent outing, which was just such an anomaly in my view.
Okay.
And I'm waiting to see a little bit more first. That just felt like the exception of a start. The rest of the rotation, though, is not there. I mean, I really just can't lean in on it at all.
No. Myers got to be a five. That's just
intriguing. But it's not, I feel like I need to see that more in action to get into it. And then also, in addition, Aaron Ashby, I don't think is the guy we want. The guy I got excited about in 2021 is not there.
No,
he wasn't there in 2022. He's not here now.
In fairness, he missed an entire year. So he is working back. I think the best way that Aaron Ashby could help them this year would be as a multi-inning reliever.
I vastly agree with you. Absolutely.
So, yeah, so just want to hit that tangent
like
there.
Like a worse Brady Singer?
Yes.
Wade Miley is five innings.
Done.
That's fine.
He's done for the year. TJ.
Oh, he's done for the complete. Oh, he was.
Yeah, he's done.
Was that like yesterday?
That was last week. Yeah.
Oh, man. I just saw he was on the IL and I just completely missed that he was done.
The TJ was quick. Yeah, that's slated for early May here. And so he's going to be gone. I wonder if he retires.
I always love Wade Miley. And it's kind of funny to me that he's retiring as a Brewer if he does retire, because to me, he never left, you know?
It feels like it, right? Because, he was there in 18 showing out, and then
the Cubs, it was a bit. It was
did his tour, Houston, Cincinnati, Cubs, and then back to Milwaukee.
Yeah, it was like, nah, you're just always in Milwaukee, man.
He's been a good pitcher, though, since that breakthrough in 2018 with the Brewers. 3.46 ERA, 1.28 WHIP in 590 innings. So if that's how Wade Miley put the capper on his career, after some decent years in Arizona too, but he really hit a next level in his 30s. I always liked Wade Miley. I even had him on our roster this year before the injury. So,
absolutely.
Best of luck to him.
The last ones, of course, there are DL Hall is on the IL now. Bryce Wilson, as I mentioned before, absolutely not. Colin Ray is just too little. I can't really speak too much to the offense. I'm glad to see
it's
that.
Okay.
He has a good WRC plus, and I mean, Yelich is 215 so far. William Contreras is killing it.
It's going to have to hard carry at a level that I just can't see. I agree with you. I'm nervous about this team.
So last thing we've got, last game we have here is a fun one. It's the one game matchup. And this is actually a very interesting one to me because I would say if you put both of these guys against the same team, I think I like mine more than yours, but the matchup is in favor of yours. And so this is going to be the Seattle Mariners versus the Houston Astros.
Mm-hmm.
I have Logan Gilbert. You have Framber Valdez. Do you feel good about Framber Valdez over Gilbert?
I do. I like this one. I like the edge. I think I have a little small edge here. I've always been a big Gilby guy, though. So I am right there on the Gilbert train. I love what he's been doing this year. And if I can prop up the guy I'm going against, I think there's a lot of viability to what he's doing. Fromber's just one of my workhorses, though. He is my dude. I'll use him in fantasy, DFS, video games, whatever it is. I love the Fromber Valdez experience. Came back, also put up a gem in Mexico City. We were talking about how Renel Blanco did. Comes off the IL to do it, too, by the way. Five innings, five hits, two walks, or two runs, no walks, no homers, six punchies. Remember when he walked six on the season opener? That's hilarious. He hasn't walked a single guy since. Now, in fairness, it's been two starts because he was on the IL. But I love Fromber Valdez. I think this is a good matchup. It is a toss-up. It can go either way. But I do believe that I have a tiny edge here because I do think that Fromber can shut down this lineup. I do think my lineup support is a little bit better here.
Yeah,
to get that win, which will be now, pivotal in these matchups.
The one thing that you, of course, mentioned, though, as well, is bullpen.
Yes.
And would you put that in favor of Seattle?
Substantially favors you, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I hope I better leave with a multi-run lead or I'm in trouble. I totally agree with that.
So the thing that's interesting to me about Logan Gilbert is I've actually been the dissenter a bit because I don't think that he spots his four-seamer well. And entering this year, it was just the slider working. Everyone was talking about the splitter and the four-seamer in the beginning of the year last year, and that went away, and I don't really have as much faith in that splitter continuing. However, what we've seen thus far is a fastball that's performed better, not because he's actually located it much better, but because now he pairs it with a cutter.
Mm.
And this cutter is, I keep going back to this in my head. It's a lesson I learned last year about four seamers and cutters, where Kodai Senga had this cutter that was so good, I believe, because he had this four seamer that he just kind of threw all over the place. They played off of each other, exactly right. And guys just couldn't figure out which is the four-seamer, which is the cutter, and it makes both of them better. So I think that's what's going on with Gilbert right now. He still has that effective slider as well. Is his command amazing? No. Is his extension absurdly elite? Yes.
And he's always been control over command.
Right.
And really shows those differences well. He just fills the zone. He doesn't always put it in the good spot.
Awesome. It's kind of like, I have two terms. There are two guys who are susceptible to quote unquote bad command. There's two types. There's one, it's called a neck beard. And that is when they have a high walk rate. And the other one is called general disarray.
General disarray.
And so, yeah, exactly. As Paul gives me a salute. So so neck beards are ones like Blake Snell and Renel Blanco, I would say. Generally, it's less about above, but it's more about the sides. You get the sideburns, and then you go underneath the zone, and you get the rest of the neck beard, right? You're not in the zone. You're just out of it. Framber Valdez does
that
this.
That description is so funny,
and Dallas Keuchel as well, right? Of course, easy to call it that.
Yeah, I mean, it had to be, yeah.
Right. Then general disarray is like the old Freddy Peralta, Tyler Glasnow, Logan Gilbert, where I don't think that's a good command guy, but it just scattershot everywhere. Joe Boyle
mostly
is
in the zone.
One of this.
Yeah. He's general disarray in and out of the zone.
Right. And it's a lot of just please, like Matt Brash is a bit of a general disarray, right?
Yep.
100%. Generally, I say both of these for higher walk rate guys. But if I do say that, I don't think this is a good command guy, that could be a description for a general disarray guy. And I think that Logan Gilbert's a little bit of that. However, that cutter does make a huge difference, I should say. And it makes this much more successful in the same way. Tyler Glasnow adding that slider helped him a ton because now he has strikes inside the zone that makes a four-seamer less appealing to batters inside the zone. So I'm going for Gilbert here against the tougher offense and hoping for the best.
Yeah, I mean, he's been undercutting lefties very well this year, which obviously helps get to the heart. Obviously, Jordan Alvarez is who you're really hoping to stay away from danger with. And so the fact that he's been doing so well against lefties does give Logan Gilbert a good shot there. So I think this could be a good one. I think this could be one where we end up a draw. Both of them put up 20 something points. I hope it's great because I'm going to be dialed in for it.
Is that slider going to be there for Framber Valdez?
That's the question.
Okay.
That will determine how far I go.
If there's any team to experiment it against, it's the Mariners. Just do it.
Let's see it. Yes, that's Saturday. If you want to watch that one, Fromber Valdez, Logan Gilbert. I got Fromber. Nick has Gilbert. So those are our games. And again, with your clean sweep week, you now have a 9-8 lead.
Oh, man. Oh, gosh. I'm going to
relish back-to-back this. Sweeps. I took one last week.
You don't take this for granted. All right.
You got to enjoy the sweeps when you get them, because you never know. The very next week, you could be on the other end of it. That's why, you know, I enjoyed it, but I didn't rub it in your face, because then I'd be looking pretty silly the Absolutely. Very next week.
Yeah, there it is. Who doesn't enjoy being on TV with a giant broom, you know?
True.
Who doesn't? Everyone does. I think Spore, that I see now that we're running out of logs. The ashes
I'll get more for next week.
Melted into the fireplace. The fire crackle, not as sharp as it used to be.
Correct.
Might be time to poke it's this one in lack of existence. It has been a wonderful time hanging with you today. And Spore, what are you working on right now?
Well, I'm working on getting a May ranking situated. I mean, doing them behind the scenes, you know, do the daily SP chart, always working off a base of rankings that I have, but obviously I don't publish them as frequently as you, but I will have a May one coming out. That should be next week. May 1st is literally in 2 days. So going to be working on that. Got the podcast on Thursday and Friday, and got my box score show on Monday, Thursdays and Fridays on twitch.tv/spore. Wasn't this Monday, but it'll be on Thursday and Friday this week. Awesome. You can check that out.
Fantastic. And of course, you'll find me on Playback. I will let you know, Spore, if anybody mentions the streamer. Okay.
Yeah, I'll be there as soon as I can if I'm not busy with something, because I want to watch it. It was a great concept. It really, really was. I liked it quite a bit.
Fun time. But anyway, guys, that is going to do it for this episode of the Fireside Chat. On behalf of Paul Spore, my name is Nick Pollock. And as always, a great time joining you by the fire.
Thanks for listening to today's Fireside Chat with Paul Spore and Nick Pollock. Follow both Paul and Nick on Twitter @Spore and @PitcherList.